Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on the sportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And Ray Woodson is our regular guest, too.
A lot of ifs, but after a disastrous 2017, the Giants were not going to rebuild. They're at least trying to compete, while many teams in the majors are tanking.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. Today's guest is Seth Everett, a man of many podcasts. You can also hear him on NBC Sports Radio and iHeartRadio. And he's been doing talk shows for a long time, starting back when I knew him in Syracuse. We used to do a hot stove baseball talk show together. And he's been with MLB.com as well. He knows his baseball. Seth Everett will join us in just a moment. But first, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. Live in San Francisco and love to play golf? Visit TPC Harding Park and purchase your two-year resident card, giving you immediate savings on golf and other programs at the park. Cut your green fees in half by purchasing your card today. Visit www.tpc.com/Harding Park for more information. Well, Seth, the Giants and the Mets, this would have been an interesting series if the two teams had played up to maybe their expectations. And, you know, you look at the Thursday matchup at Citi Field, Madison Bumgarner against DeGrom. I mean, wow, that would have been really cool to see that, you know, the way those two guys are capable of throwing the ball, but it didn't materialize. So let's try to figure that out. I mean, why didn't it materialize? Certainly injuries, but, you know, you look at the lineups, and certainly the offenses for both teams have been lackluster, don't you think?
Sure, and I think by the time people hear this, there'll be a reality that both these guys should have been traded. I mean, let's be honest. I think that, you know, the situation with the Giants is an interesting one in that I didn't have really high expectations. I was encouraged by some good play early on. And I thought because they had veterans on their rotation, I thought they could have turned that into something. You know, I said that all along. Once it was clear that they weren't going to win the division, I kind of, you know, changed my attitude. Because I thought that maybe teams would give an arm and a leg for Bumgarner. And the only reason why was because there were really no blockbuster pitchers on the market, especially because of DeGrom. And then Johnny Cueto got hurt, and I thought that changed my attitude on the whole thing. And now, you know, I kind of think you have to build around Bumgarner and understand that. As far as the Mets are concerned, I never thought they were any good. not to belittle your question, but I didn't think that was a good team at all. They put all their eggs in this young pitching basket, and they only really have one bona fide ace and a lot of question marks. And, you know, their offense was very inconsistent. They didn't really make significant additions, and I just thought they were not a good baseball team. You know, in their division, I thought Atlanta and Philadelphia would be better. I didn't think they'd be this good. And I thought Washington would have been the dominant team, and, you know, me and every other person who watched the sport.
Yeah, I mean, that seems logical. And it was logical to figure that the Dodgers would rule the West. I don't think many people thought the Diamondbacks and the Rockies would play as well as they're playing. And, you just kind of see the younger players coming through. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that. I was really encouraged by Arizona and Colorado last year. I thought Bud Black did a remarkable job. You know, putting the expectations so low, and then making sure that it went wonderfully when these pitchers responded to his challenges. You know, Bud Black started last year saying all I was going to do was evaluate the pitching in the system and tell Rockies management what they actually had, not what scouts tell you or not what reporters tell you, but tell you what he actually sees. And the pitchers all had a chance to audition for him. And it almost became like, you know, when you're a young musician, you get a chance to you know, be a backup singer for U2 or, you know, Bruce Springsteen. Like, Bud Black is a wizard at pitching. And, you know, we saw it for all those years he was with the Padres. And I just thought, from my perspective, I thought the Rockies would do great. I liked the Diamondbacks, too, as well. And I have been impressed by how communicative Torrey Lovello has been. You know, he's one of those guys in the trend of these young managers who are really just, you know, great psychologists and, you know, pretty much are conduits from the sabermetricians in the front office. And, you know, it's part of the crisis facing the game. But the reality of it is that, you know, I thought the Dodgers had a fight on their hands. And I was curious going into the season what the Diamondbacks and Rockies would be like.
Well, the bottom line, Seth, is that a lot of the teams that are successful right now in Major League Baseball have these up-and-coming star players, these younger players. And the thing that I saw with the Giants, they kind of reminded me a little bit of the New York Rangers back in the day in the NHL, where they would get a lot of these star names way after their prime. I mean, when you see Andrew McCutchen and Evan Longoria, those are great names, but they're well past their prime, and it's showing on the field. I mean, they're just not having the same seasons that they normally would have, or, you know, they had in the past.
But I don't think anybody was had misgivings. I don't, you know, it's kind of the, let me make one more pop culture reference, right? Like, it's kind of the people who saw Avengers Infinity War. Like, the audience is smarter than that, right? Like, they know that the big stunt at the end, I don't want to spoil it for anybody who didn't see it, but come to my Hall of Justice podcast, we spoil the hell out of it. You know, no one walked out of the Marvel movie and goes, "Oh, gee willikers, they did all that." Like, no one's that dumb. And I don't think when the Giants acquired Longoria, I don't think anybody thought they were getting the 2007 version. I just think fans are smarter than that. And, you know, that's thanks to social media and thanks to all the great reporting that goes on, even though newspapers are not the way they're finding it anymore. I don't think anybody was fooled into thinking the Giants were getting a fool's gold.
Well, here's the problem. When you have a long contract like Longoria, he's going to be signed until, or he is signed until 2022. And you've got Mark Melancon that
we'll
paid.
We'll have the flying car by then.
Yeah. I mean, you paid all this money to Mark Melancon. You know, Brandon Belt's got a contract that lasts for a few more years. And if you're going to move Buster Posey to first base, and of course, the big news yesterday that he's likely to have hip surgery, you know, maybe you're going to move him to first base. So you've got these contracts that are really difficult to deal with, then you put yourself in a bind. And I think right now that's where the Giants stand, is that it's tough to improve a team when you've got these contracts like that.
Yeah, and I think that's, you're starting to see the change in philosophy. You know, it's part of, again, you know, the crisis facing baseball. And that is, you know, nobody wants to spend these long-term contracts. They want, you know, cost certainty. It's why J.D. Martinez went, you know, 3 weeks into the Grapefruit League before he signed with the Red Sox, or Jake Arrieta signed with the Phillies. I mean, you're starting to see exactly this problem. And, you know, the reason why you have this problem is quite frankly, nobody wants to have the problem that the Giants are having. You know, the Giants are a late bloomer to join the new wave of disgusting things in baseball, because they still have a manager who commands a clubhouse. They didn't go the Aaron Boone, Alex Cora, Dave Martinez, Craig Counsell, Torrey Lovello, Dave Roberts. Like, they didn't go that whole rim. They decided to do something a little better than that. What they did was they, you know, brought in a powerful voice in Bruce Bochy. But I'll say this, you know, Bruce Bochy, Mike Scioscia, and Buck Showalter are probably the end. I don't think Joe Girardi gets hired soon. And I think that what you're going to start to see is more young guys that get a chance, because these young guys, they listen well, they do what the front office wants, and they no fuss, no muss.
Well, you talk about modern day baseball, and I look at stats in a keen way. I'm a stats guy. I love baseball stats, but I think sometimes these teams are over reliant on analytics. It's just become ridiculous where, you know, you're looking at every little analytics piece, you know, defensively too, where your eyes might tell you something even more than the analytics will tell you. And, you know, you've got the shifts and everything. And I don't know that Major League Baseball can really eliminate shifts. I mean, what are you going to do with these guys? So what are your thoughts?
I'd eliminate the shift yesterday. I said it the minute it came in. This sport, okay, you talk about stats. I'll give you stats. More strikeouts than hits.
That is crazy.
First time ever. 3 minutes, 49 seconds between balls hit and play. Baseball is on pace to have 10,000 less balls hit and play than 2009. Now, this isn't the get off my lawn like baseball was better in the 60s or better than the 80s. Like, I'm not going there. 2009, Joe.
Yeah.
It's been a crisis. They have gotten to a point of where launch angle, this is my favorite new statistic. Launch angle is, I had lunch the other day, probably now a month ago, with a couple of guys at Citizens Bank Park, and they were talking about, the teams that they were scouting. And they weren't going to give me the teams because they knew I was in the media, and I would have tweeted this in 2 seconds. Right. But they told me that he was covering two teams that teach at both the major and minor league level that launch angle is your number one priority when you get into the batter's box.
Oh.
Contact is number two.
Oh, man.
I went, what? What? And I'm sorry, but I would have outlawed that shift in a heartbeat because I don't think baseball exists in 30 years. I think baseball is facing a crisis. It's lowest attendance since 2002, and I think that there is a couple of reasons for it. I'm not saying the shift fixes everything, but I am promising you, outlawing the shift is the only thing that gives that game a fighting chance.
How do you do it? I mean, because I've heard, feet on the dirt.
Oh,
but
it's easy.
Yeah,
easy.
I don't know about that.
It's a point. It's an imaginary line through the point of home plate to straightaway center field. And before the pitch is thrown, the shortstop, the left fielder, and the third baseman can't cross it. The first baseman, the second baseman, the right fielder can't cross it. The only three players that are authorized to play on both sides of the line are the catcher, the pitcher, and the center fielder. That's it. And I would institute that rule. You could do it with a blink of an eye, and there's your missing hits. Now, I'm not saying that launch angle would suddenly not be a thing anymore, because I think the genie's out of the bottle. But at least give your sport an effing chance.
Like, I might agree with you.
Chance.
Yeah.
And this, my whole point about it, because you and I are similar in age, and the reality of it is that, we grew up loving this game. The game has meant a lot to both our careers.
Yeah.
And this is a circumstance where I firmly believe, I honestly do, I firmly believe that our generation is the last generation that really cares. I don't think, check the numbers who listen to your podcast. I mean, find out. I find when I do things that are baseball related, the audience that agrees with it are in their 30s and 40s. And I'm 44. And when I am 75 years old, I don't think the 50-year-olds and the 40-year-olds who are now in their 10s and 20s, I don't think they're going to give a crap.
Hey, you're probably right about that.
It's alarming. And the scary part about what has gone on in this sport is that, there's a great article by Scott Miller, because basically what he did is he took all the things that we're talking about and he went up to Cooperstown, Hall of Fame induction weekend, and he heard from all the Hall of Famers. And the Hall of Fame, we're not talking about Bill Mazeroski. Like, we're not talking about, baseball was better in my day. I'm talking about a sport that I've been covering since 1996. I covered the 01 World Series. I covered 02, 03. I've seen those World Series. I've seen those seasons. I saw the Maguire Sosa nonsense. I saw the Bond stuff. I saw all of it firsthand. And I'm telling you that it was a better sport then. And this sport is missing something. They talk about all these relief pitchers that throw 100 miles an hour. That's not more entertaining. And the fact of the matter is that, I had a GM tell me, because, he overheard one of these conversations that I was having about the state of the game. And he came over to me and he said, not for nothing, but I agree with you. I said, you're a culprit, man. You just brought in a super high price slugger that strikes out 200 times. And he said, hey, I'm paid to win. I'm not paid to entertain you. And well, he's right, because if you think about it, and this is my last point on this, because I'll get off the soapbox, but my last point is the only people that are talking about this are in markets that don't have contenders. Because in Milwaukee, they don't care about this right now. Because they're like, yeah, the game's boring, and yeah, the game's slow, but we want a championship. We want a chance to win.
Sure.
And that's all that matters. The Cubs, they're like, we've waited 100 years. We got one World Series. We finally tasted victory. We don't give a crap about how many shifts it's going to take. But the reality of it is that anytime you're in a market where people are taking a step back, you're on pace to have six teams lose 100 games this year. The record is 4. If you're a 100-loss team, you are god-awful. And somebody asked me about my analysis of the Red Sox, right? You could take 10 of their victories away, and my analysis of the Red Sox would be exactly the same. Nothing would change. Unlike the 98 Yankees and unlike the 2001 Mariners, the Red Sox are not a great team. They're just a team that's beat up on the brutal Orioles 19 times.
Right. Well, yeah, the tanking is another problem in baseball. But, you know, that's something that the Giants weren't willing to do that. But getting back to your point about the shifts and everything, you know, I look at Michael Conforto. He kind of looks like your regular, you know, your average player today in baseball. He's hitting around 230, but he has 18 home runs. And, you know, the shift has something to do with it because these guys are just trying to hit home runs because they know if they hit one up the middle, it's not going to be a base hit. So I like your idea about the imaginary line up the middle. The one suggestion I don't like that I've heard from Buster Olney at ESPN is spikes on the dirt. To me, that doesn't make sense because you still should be able to play a little bit deeper at an infield position. Or what if you want to come in? You can't say spikes on the dirt.
Yeah.
You got to be able to come in. And play, you know.
I never heard that. Yeah. I never heard that. That's probably because I don't watch ESPN anymore. But the the idea that's all well and good. I think the way to do it, and I've said this to Rob Manfred, I just think you could outlaw it in a second. And he's like, well, what about interfering with the way, you know, the game is played and the strategy behind the game? And I said, tell those kids that are on Twitter that are not watching baseball, tell them about all the strategy. You know, Jason Stark had a great line on my Sports with Friends podcast. See that? I plugged 2 podcasts while I was on. Jason Stark was on Sports with Friends, and he had a great line, so I don't want to take credit for the line. He said, baseball is a thinking man's game. But there needs to be more action to supplement all the thinking.
That's a great point. I love Jason Stark. So, that doesn't surprise me that he would say something smart like that. Now, you mentioned Barry Bonds in there. I did want to talk about him because recently he had his number retired by the Giants. And I would have to say
It was a nice ceremony.
And I'd say based on reaction here in San Francisco that it was probably 95%. Positive. Now, there was a guest on my podcast here, Steve Bitker from KCBS, who was the other way. He said that, you know, the Giants retiring his number was not a good idea, that, you know, Barry Bonds was a disgrace to the Giants uniform. Now, he brought up some good points, and I'm not a Bonds supporter when it comes to the Hall of Fame, as long as you have the character clause in there. But, you know, you have to be willing to admire what he did on the field as a Giant. I thought the number being retired was a good idea. What's your perspective on it, and what do you think the national thoughts are on this? You know, what do you think fans around the country thought about Bonds' number being retired?
Well, the reality of Bonds is San Francisco was always unconditionally supportive of it. I don't know where your friend from KCBS was, you know, during the late 90s, early 2000s, but I remember going in, and you could not say an ill thing about Bonds during the height of the steroid crisis. When the book Game of Shadows came out and it implicated Bonds, that was a heresy in San Francisco. And I thought what was never available was balance. It was never fairness because people outside of San Francisco were so anti-Bonds, they never acknowledged the remarkable hitter that he was. He was the best left-handed hitter I'd ever seen. And I was there when he broke Hank Aaron's record. And I think, you know, I've said this for decades, the records are legitimate. The record holders are in question because the ball did go over the fence and those runs did count in games and those standings did happen. So you know, you can't take all that back. It's not like college sports where they, you know, mysteriously take away wins, which I never understood.
Right.
How do you vacate a win? Like, you were there. I have a ticket stub. What are you talking about?
Right.
But the reality of Bonds is, you know, I don't think this is about the Hall of Fame. You know, everyone's obsessed with the Hall of Fame, when in reality, if you take a look at the Hall of Fame, it is such an antiquated voting process. You have an entity known as the Baseball Writers Association of America, which is a very powerful union, and it's a union of which I have dear, dear friends. But it's a union where newspapers are folding left and right, and members of that union are doing anything in their power to get into electronic media, starting podcasts, writing blogs, joining the internet, going on television. I mean, you could name hundreds of reporters who have done that. And yet the only people who are eligible to vote for the Hall of Fame are this conservative group of baseball writers.
Doesn't make sense, right? That doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. And so the voting process is a complete sham. The only way this works is if you acknowledge, you know, whatever criteria you want to establish. And again, this is not to be self-serving. I sleep very well at night if I never have a Hall of Fame vote. But the reality is that there has to be some kind of level of criteria to change the voting process. And I think if you did that and allowed electronic media, I think more people would be fairer to Barry Bonds. And I'm not saying he'd get in, but he'd have a much better shot than under this current system. And, you know, I can tell you a great story about the Hall of, like, I think the world of the people with the Hall of Fame, and that's why I very much delineate the voting process from the museum itself. The museum is made up of some of the classiest individuals I have ever known in my days covering the sport. And I think the world of them. It is a shame. And their museum is gorgeous. And their induction weekend is magical. And if you've ever had a love for the game of baseball, you know, Cooperstown, New York is your Xanadu. That being said, the voting process is ridiculous.
And it is.
It needs to be changed, and the only people that can change it are the people at the Hall of Fame, and they know it, and they're not willing to do anything about it because they like the process the way they have, and that's kind of the way they're going to do it. And as long as that happens, you know, it's the same thing for Roger Clemens. But, you know, my laugh was, you know, I covered baseball in the 90s and the 2000s, and I heard rumors about all kinds of guys. You know, I heard rumors about Mike Piazza. I never said anything about him because that's what they were rumors. But what did Bonds do wrong? He used steroids from the wrong lab. You know what I mean? Because the reality of it is that if you take the rosters from 1998, the year of Maguire Sosa, and print out all the 25-man rosters from opening day, I could circle seven guys on each team that was doing some form of cheating.
True, and, I mean, but it still is cheating, you know? I mean, that's the thing that disappoints me.
I'm not denying that, but everybody did it. And it was a thing where nobody cried, you know, nobody didn't buy tickets, and no one's taking the 1998 World Series away from the Yankees. And they were guilty as anybody.
Right.
Well, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to have this clause in the, you know, voting at the Hall of Fame, that's a noble idea, but I think that should have been changed once you got to the point where you had
clause?
A steroids. Yeah, you have a steroids era, and you have writers that are softening on this, even though that clause is in there.
Yeah, I mean, look, the character clause is kind of it's not really about steroids because, you know, Ty Cobb was a known racist, and he's in the Hall of Fame, and no one's talking about him getting out. You know, there was still a huge, you know, faction of people that say that if Pete Rose was on the ballot, he'd get votes. But the reality is that when it comes to Bonds and it comes to Clemens, there's enough of these old fogies that these writers that are, you know, strictly, you know, getting ink on their fingers from the newspapers that are dying. You know, they're not going to give these guys a fair shot. I'm not saying I'd vote for him, but I would say that he'd get a more liberal vote if he changed the voting process.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It just remains a very difficult question for people to answer, I think. Well, Seth, thanks a lot for your time. Really appreciate it. I'm sure we'll be talking again soon. You know, got all these podcasts going on. It's a lot of fun in, you know, today's sports broadcasting world that you can do these things. I look forward to listening to some of yours and hearing you on the radio as well.
I love it. You know, podcasting to me is the future of the spoken word. And, you know, I'm a big believer. And I remember, you know, back in the days at MLB.com when we were doing that show on MLB Radio, and they said, how can we make this archivable? We put out an MP3 of the show and said, here, download this. Put it on your iPod. That was the first podcast. So believe me, I'm a big believer in that.
Well, Seth, thanks a lot and appreciate your time and have a good week.
You got it, my man.
That's New York-based talk show host Seth Everett. We'll be back with you again next week. Ray Woodson will be with us, and we'll be out at AT&T Park in San Francisco as the Giants have a long homestand. They've got the Rangers, Diamondbacks, and the New York Mets coming up on the next homestand. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.